ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः शान्तिः शान्तिः। ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ, may brahman bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge, may we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge, may what we both study reveal the truth, may we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om peace, peace, peace be unto all. So we are going to study the karma yoga of Swami Vivekananda. Why is it so important for us to study this karma yoga, especially now? There are some special reasons for that. The first reason is, as time passes, work increases. Karma means work. Many times people imagine that as we go on progressing, creating more machinery, technology improves, then our work will become less and we get more leisure. But no, we see that more and more work is increasing. So time is a factor in the increment of work. Second, work has a tendency to produce more work. The more we work, the more work comes. This is a very practical thing. Every office goer knows what is happening. He works very hard thinking, I will finish up this work, then I can relax. But what happens is exactly the contrary. So why does it happen? One simple reason is, work, if it is not done properly, it produces more desires, and desires create more work. There was a very nice article in Scientific American many years back. These Americans are one of the gadget lovers, you know, all sorts of gadgets they have. Even, you know, they are so lazy, this for opening and closing the curtains, they have got a switch. So somebody went and then took a survey of how these people are enjoying their lives. Then they found out, to their great astonishment, every American on an average had the largest number of these gadgets and instruments to help, and most of their time they are working very hard to maintain those gadgets. They have very little time to enjoy the gadgets themselves. This applies in almost all of our lives. Suppose you have one car, it is wonderful. Suppose you have two cars, what happens? Your time is spent in washing the car, getting MOT, and then repairing it, and all those things. Suppose you have a television, and you have only four channels. So you have enough time to watch one of the channels. But suppose you have 500 channels. What do you think you will be doing all the time? You will be going on changing to find out, maybe the next channel there is a better program. And by that time, it is time to go to bed. So work itself has a tendency to produce more work. And this has been so beautifully illustrated by Swami Vivekananda in the form of a story, The Poor Man and the Demon. We will come to it at some point. Thirdly, what is the purpose of work? The purpose of work is so that we can enjoy life. But instead of that, work is producing more amount of unhappiness. Why? Because work increases selfishness, it produces characterlessness, it leads to immorality, self-indulgence, ultimately to ignorance, leading to increase of misery. Work has only one purpose. It is to make us free. Freedom is the goal of work. Why do you work? You want to be free. You are poor. Why do you work? You want to get rid of poverty. So you are ignorant. Why do you work? Why do you study hard? You want to increase your knowledge. So always work has a purpose. The purpose is more and more freedom. But freedom is not that something outside. Freedom is freedom of the mind. If you are not free in your mind, any amount of political freedom, economic freedom, or other sorts of freedoms will not give you the sense of fulfillment. It will only increase your sense of bondage. Then, work also produces tremendous amount of stress and strain. It is not because of work itself. It is because the way we work. The same work can make us free. The same work can reduce the work. The same work can make us unselfish and knowledgeable. The same work can lead us to happiness, to bliss, to character, to willpower. But instead, it is the work itself has nothing to do with these results. It is the way we do any sort of work. For example, suppose somebody is cutting the throat of another person or cutting the neck of another person. If I just give you this statement, what do you think will happen to this man who is going on beheading other people? What would be your answer? Definitely this person would go to only one place. Right? But no. Depending upon how he is discharging that work, maybe he will attain self-knowledge instantaneously. I will tell you a small story. There was a kingdom, and there was a king, and there was a saintly person. So once the king was in great difficulty, and this saint helped him. Though he was a saint, he was not a monk. He was just a holy man. He was a very poor person. He lived just like an ordinary coolie like that. But he helped this king, and the king was highly pleased. He told him, "Oh, you have done a great good to me. Come tomorrow morning to my court, and whatever you ask, I will give you." So next day, the poor man went to the court, and the king told in front of everyone, "This man had rendered the greatest service to me, and I am going to grant him whatever he asks." And the ministers, chief minister, and then all those people, their hearts started beating. Suppose this man asks, "I want to be a prime minister," their jobs will be gone, you see. But this man made a very strange request. He said, "You give me the job of beheading those criminals who are destined, who have been awarded that punishment." Now that is only the lowest type of person, the butcher, will do that kind of job. The king was surprised. "Do you really mean what you say? Have you thought about it?" He said, "Yes, I have been thinking since yesterday, and this is exactly the job I want, to kill these condemned criminals." Now the king was helpless. He had to grant the wish of this person. So this person was appointed the chief executioner. What was this man doing? You see, those criminals, those who have been caught red-handed, who have been awarded death punishment, they would be put in a place, and then they would be given charge of this person on the appointed day to be executed. So this, what this man will do, he will take these criminals to be beheaded next morning. previous night and make them sit down in the crematorium and go on telling stories about Lord Hari. This man was a wonderful storyteller. He goes on telling the glories of God, sings about God, make the criminals forget about this world and only think about God. And you know, in India we have this idea, whatever is the last thought before death, next birth is determined by that. So when these people were deeply absorbed in the thought of God, this executioner will go and behead them. So he was doing this kind of what you call gory type of work. But what was his purpose? To help the criminals attain to a higher state. So even though the type of work he was doing from our point of view is one of the most horrendous, but the way he was doing that work, do you think that God will not be pleased with him? Don't you think he will award him mukti? So any type of work is like that. Swami Vivekananda, he had delivered these talks on Karma Yoga in 8 chapters. Practically in every chapter, there is a beautiful story illustrating a particular point. We will come to that later on. So it is not work itself the cause of our stress or strain or ignorance or anything. It is the way we do any type of work. You can kill, you can scold, you can cook, you can sweep, you can do anything. But some type of, even you may be a great saint, you may be meditating, and your meditation, if it is not done properly, it can lead you to hell. Yes? And if a person is killing, but if it is a right type of, right way of killing, then he will attain liberation. You may think, How does a holy man or a spiritual aspirant who goes on thinking of God, meditating on God, praying to God, singing on God, reading holy books, will he go to hell? Well, you see, there is the story of this conversation between the monk and the butcher in Mahabharata. That is an illustration. Why? Because meditation on God should produce certain changes. Meditation is also work. We think that if we do something with our body, that is work. But if we are sitting and meditating, what are you doing? No, I am not doing anything. But he is doing through his mind more intense work than anybody else. So that type of work also, if it is not done properly, meditation can produce egotism. It can produce that superiority complex. It can even produce doubts about God. And ultimately it can lead him to hell. That is a beautiful story which we will come in course of time. So it is not the work that leads to either happiness or unhappiness, either to bondage or liberation. It is the way some work is done. But in general, work leads to selfishness. Work can lead to more work. Work can create so much of strain. This karma or karma yoga has been emphasized from long time back. I will come back to that point also. But why especially in this age? Because this is an age of karma. We are living in an age when work has overtaken everything else. If somebody sits and prays to God, then people will look down upon him. What are you doing? Even if a 90-year-old man is trying to sit down, why are you sitting, a useless fellow like this? Why don't you do some work? Last time when I visited USA, I wanted to buy a suitcase. I went to a shop which was open on a Sunday. And there was this 85 years old Japanese man puttering about in the shop. He was so happy to see us. We were practically the only customers at that time. So I asked him, Are you not having enough work at this age? Why are you taking the trouble of coming on Sunday morning and working here? He said, Swami, I need more money. No money is, the amount of money is enough. Secondly, he said, what do I do at home? Here I can see some people, I can have a talk, and I can engage myself. So work has become a venue of escape for most of the people. It has become like that demon. You know the story, Swami Vivekananda, give me work, otherwise it will kill you. Where is that demon? Our own mind is the restlessness is the demon. Give me work. What is the antidote for restlessness? Apparently, we think work is the antidote for restlessness. How foolish we are. What is the antidote for restlessness? What is the antidote for darkness? What is the antidote for restlessness? Rest, not work. But work gives apparent rest because it doesn't allow us to face our demons and deal with them. This is a way of escaping, but it will not work. So there is a progress according to Vedantic concept. This idea of progress by scientists is one way. You know, this inorganic matter has become organic, has come with life, and from one-celled life, the human life is the highest, biologically speaking. This is not how Vedanta interprets the idea of progress. Scientists say we have progressed a lot. Vedanta says you are still the same brute. In fact, the one-celled organism is much better than you. Why? Because according to Vedanta, progress is measured not by how much money we have, how much intellect we have, or how much intelligence we have developed. According to Vedanta, progress always takes place in the direction of God. We call it Sat, Chit, Ananda. What is the first progress? Sat. What is the meaning of Sat? Sat means to exist, to survive. Scientists have accepted that much. Yes, survival is the most important criteria of progress. But Vedanta doesn't stop with mere survival. Sat means, according to Vedanta, to progress towards God, to be good. Sat, sat log, we say, to be good. Sat means truth, to be truthful. Sat means ultimately to be God, to realize our true nature. That is how we have to judge whether we are really progressing or not. This body, of course, is a biological instrument. This mind also is an instrument. Body and mind both are instruments which help us. If the instruments themselves become the ends, then there would be no progress. The point will be cleared if I give you an illustration. See, a man has enough money and he buys a Rolls Royce car. What is the purpose of a car? To go to places. Suppose after buying the car from morning till evening, he is going on cleaning it only and keeping it in a beautiful shape. Speak and span, it is shining like anything, and he is exhibiting it, and he would not allow the slightest scratch to be taken place, right? What do you call that man? Do you call him a wise man? Or do you call him a fool? So if our body and mind are instruments, if we are going on keep satisfying the body and mind, whom are we satisfying? Are we satisfying ourselves? Are we satisfying God? Or are we satisfying body and mind? If we are running after the pleasures of the body and mind, then it is like keeping a car speak and span. These are instruments. Atmanam rathinam vitti shariram rathamevatu. This we have read in the Katha Upanishad. This Atman, the real self, is the charioteer or the rider. And this mind is only an instrument. This body is a chariot. The mind is like the ropes which control this chariot. The sense organs are the horses. This world, the objects of the senses, they are the paths through which this chariot runs. But what for do you have a chariot? To take you somewhere. But without going anywhere, you are cleaning the road, you are cleaning the chariot, you are cleaning the horses. Where do you go? Can it be called progress? If you sit in the car, start driving and go somewhere, that is called progress. But if we don't go anywhere but go on cleaning the car, it is no progress at all. So what is the progress? First, there must be biological, keep the instruments fit. But recognize that they are the instruments. Second, chit. Chit means knowledge, awareness. So chit, the word chit has two meanings, knowledge and awareness. Knowledge means obtaining the knowledge about the outside world, or even about the mind, about the body, everything. But awareness means to know the purpose. Why are we having this knowledge? You see, two psychiatrists met in a street. How do they greet each other? One is greeting the other. You are fine, how am I? So he knows how the other man is. But what about himself? So if the psychiatrist is supposed to know about everybody else, but he knows about everybody else excepting himself. So can you call him really a psychiatrist? A psychiatrist is one who knows more about himself than other people. If the psychiatrist himself is ignorant about himself, how is he going to cure the other people? You know, a man, he was profoundly unhappy, depressed. So he went to a psychiatrist. And psychiatrist tested him, examined him and found nothing wrong with that. He said, man, there is nothing wrong with you. But you need to cheer up a little. Do one thing. At every Thursday, there is a wonderful comic show. And people who see that go on laughing and laughing and laughing. So you watch that one, you will be all right. The man said, doctor, I am that actor who makes other people laugh. He is making everybody else laugh. But what about himself? Is he laughing? That is why he is deceased. So, knowledge is very necessary. But knowledge also must lead to increased self-awareness. You know, so many of our devotees attend what is called Vipassana course. What is that Vipassana course? Increase your awareness. How you sit, how you breathe, what type of thoughts come to you, and see that your body is not restless and all those things. So chit means there must be increase of knowledge. We must know about the nature of things because they are also instruments. But at the same time, that also must lead to increased knowledge of the self. I'm not talking even merely mental self, psychological self, but our true self, that what is our real nature. Thirdly, the progress. If a man is surviving, he is well, and he has all knowledge, but he is not happy. What is the good of that? So the third criteria for progress is ananda. He must be blissed. And what is ananda? It's a very important point. Usually ananda is translated as bliss. Or it is, what is bliss? Increased happiness. No. There is a heaven and hell difference between happiness and bliss. Happiness or pleasure or joy, all these are the result of dependency upon something else. You are hungry, you eat food, you are happy. You are cold, you put on warm clothing, you are happy. You are bored, you watch a nice movie and you are satisfied. So it increases our dependency, slavery upon other things. That is, you are fulfilling a desire and temporarily removing that desire, and you feel temporarily you are happy. Whereas bliss means complete absence of desire. There is no desire because you have attained everything that is attainable, and there is nothing more for you to attain, and you are perfectly happy. Absence of desire, conquest of desire. So if work can lead us to progress, it should lead us through these three steps. Work must make our body healthy and a fit instrument. It must lead to intellectual increase. It must lead to moral progress. But all these are instruments. And finally, it must lead to spiritual knowledge, knowledge of our own true self. That is why it is said, the Purushartha, according to Hinduism or Vedanta, Purushartha means what are the supreme values of life. What are they? There are four: Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. More or less they fall into this category: biological progress, intellectual progress, moral progress, and ultimately to spiritual progress. But these earlier three types of progresses are called instrumental values, whereas liberation or self-knowledge is called intrinsic value. So according to Vedanta, we are all in pursuit of values, and if work doesn't allow us to practice values, to acquire values, we are only leading an animal life, not a human life. So we will discuss these points in details in our talks here. Now the point that I am trying to make is, Swami Vivekananda is the first person to deal with this Karma Yoga in such marvelous detail. You hear of Karma Yoga in Bhagavad Gita. Many times it comes, practice Karma Yoga. But then there is no details how to do it, what is the effect of karma, what do you mean by karma, and how we should practice it. Some general indications are there, but there are no detailed discussions about it. In our Vedas, the word karma is used in a very special sense. Karma there is used in the sense of ritualism. You practice like modern day pujas, homas like that. You practice certain yajnas, certain sacrificial rites, certain types of ceremonials, and then that person is supposed to be doing karma. That's why Vedas are divided into karma kanda or jnana kanda. Later on, this idea of karma kanda has taken a different direction. So if Mahabharata time, Ramayana time, we find the karma is used increasingly in the sense of dharma. You not only you work, but you do the work in a particular way. That is called dharma. What is dharma according to Ramayana, Mahabharata? Performance or right discharge of one's duties according to one's station and birth in life is called dharma. Bhagavad Gita takes this idea a step further and says that it is not only particular type of work. For example, if you are a blacksmith, to do all those, you know, masonry, iron things, wheels and all those things, that is your dharma. And if you are born as in the third class, a Vaishya, there are certain types of duties. If you are a Brahmin, you have certain types of duties. If you are a student, certain types of duties. If you are after 60, certain types of duties. Now, here is something very interesting. These days, the system of caste has become very mixed up, and therefore the pertinent duties to particular caste do not apply any longer. Varna Sankara has taken place. But one thing hasn't changed, that all of us have to go through life. So life can be divided, or Hinduism or Vedanta divided life into four parts: the student life, the married life, the retired life, and the renounced life. Brahmacharya, Garhastya, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa. Though it is not exactly like this in the at the present time, there is no such division as married life and retired life. There are only two divisions: these monks and those who are householders. These are there. But one thing hasn't changed. Either even if we, whether we are householders or monks, we have to, you know, become youths, we have to become middle-aged persons, we have to become retired persons. After 60, there is a kind of dharma is there. If anybody is watching cricket match after 60, Sri Ramakrishna would look and say, fie upon you. Yeah. And I used to say that some priests were taking bath in the Ganga, and they were talking the price of the fish. And nowadays these fishermen have become cutthroats. They have increased this. Ramakrishna said, what is this? You are more than 50 years old. Are these the things? You are Brahmins. You are taking bath in the Ganga. And then are these the things you have to do? This is one. Another example is some priests were playing cards, sitting in the temple, because, you know, people very often, they don't go to temples. Because if they go to temples, there is a rule in India, you have to take something. Therefore, to just to avoid taking something, you don't, best thing is not to visit any temple. So they had so much of leisure. How to pass time? You see, a young man we can understand, but a man of 60 years, he is playing cards, sitting there. Then Ramakrishna used to say, fie upon you. So there is a time for learning, there is a time for enjoying, there is a time for slowly getting inward. And in our order, earlier times, our elderly monks used to encourage these things. If some monk doesn't want to go to and perform tapasya, Mahapurush Maharaj, for example, one day he suddenly called a man and said, what is this you are doing? Always work, work, work. Go to Rishikesh and practice tapasya for 2 years and come back. As though the sky had fallen upon this man. Because what will he do? He never got accustomed himself for tapasya, you know. It's a punishment. Nowadays, if any monk does something wrong, the punishment is they send him to UK. UK means in India, Uttarakashi. So, you know, when I went there, some monk came there and said, are you coming from UK? I said, yes. He said, I am also coming from UK. I was puzzled. What do you mean by you are coming from UK? I am coming from Uttarakashi. Short for Uttarakashi is UK. He has done something wrong, displeased the authority, so they sent him off to UK for some time and he came back. So, we have to take care, because what is the idea? The idea is, when you have attained certain age, 60 years old, then you slowly withdraw yourself from unnecessary extraneous work. No religion can force us from stopping work. If it is we are restless, we have to do work. Monks, they are supposed to renounce work. This is very well known in India. Don't work. But what do they mean by work? How could anybody renounce work? It is, work is not something in your hands either to renounce or to accept. If you are restless, what will you do? Is it in your hands to become restful? You have to do something about it. So a monk means he reduces the physical work but increases the spiritual work. Merely exchanges one type of work for another type of work. That is what Sri Ramakrishna meant. Now you should repeat God's name more, study scriptures more, prepare yourself for the world to come, and try to be generally happy. Now this has got not only spiritual benefits, but it also has got social benefits and economic benefits too, and also political benefits. I tell you, suppose Jyoti Basu at 60 he retired, then you see younger politicians would have had a chance to become chief ministers of West Bengal, but until his last breath he didn't give it up. They had to force him out, but he is still not leaving that house, chief minister's house. He is the puller of the strings behind. So that is political benefit. If all the old fellows retire, sometimes it happens in monasteries also. A monk has become very old. He should retire. The younger people should take up. No, out of jealousy, we do not allow often these things. What are economic benefits? Suppose all the people above 60, those who have got more or less enough money for simple living, if they retire, how this unemployment problem would be very wonderful, is it not? A lot of people would get employment. What are social benefits? Social benefits, you see, supposing you have your parents who are retired and you have children, you don't need to run after caretakers. Because grandparents are made in heaven for taking care of the grandchildren. And at the same time, the grandparents also will be taken care of by their own children. Now see what is happening. Everybody is throwing off the... these are old people. Put them in the old age. Here, old age is taking care of their parents. And here, the caretakers are taking care of their children. In both ways, the development is not all right. So, and if a person becomes truly retired, I'm not talking about simply withdrawing from work, but going inside, indrawn, withdrawn, if a person goes inside, then how wonderful atmosphere will be created, peaceful, be satisfied, and moreover, they will be good examples to society. So that is why those values that one should retire and practice dharma according to a particular age is still valid in many respects. So according to Bhagavad Gita, Ramayana, Mahabharata, performance of discharging of one's duties in the proper way pertaining to their station in life and to their caste, to their job, etc., it is called dharma or a kind of karma yoga. But according to Lord Krishna, karma yoga is a means of spiritual progress. But in those days, in olden times, because the necessities were very few. Now, do not misunderstand me. Man's desires would never become less at any age. But desires were less in the past, not because they were having less desires, but because they were having less objects to desire. They never knew what was a Rolls Royce car. So if you ask 200 years back a man, would you like to buy a Rolls Royce car? He would look blank at you, because he is simply ignorant about that object. Nowadays, what is happening, the more progress is happening, the more the objects are increasing, unending number of objects. And therefore, our desires also have increased. Because desires have increased, work also is increasing. Because work increases, it creates a kind of strain and stress. How many people suffer from stress-related problems these days? And then competition. So much competition between husband and wife. Have you heard about it? Suppose both husband and wife are working. Suppose wife is earning more than the husband. Do you think the husband will be happy? I have to see how many husbands will be happier if their wives are having better post and better salary and better power and position and all that. Jealousy will come. And then the whole family life is disrupted. How much family life is disrupted nowadays, you people know. So all these reasons, Swami Vivekananda, he had to deal with this special subject. In the past, yoga or spiritual paths were only three. Especially only three. Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga, Jnana Yoga. And Karma Yoga was a subsidiary to Jnana Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, never an independent path by itself. But Swami Vivekananda had made it an a completely independent path. Why is it so? There is one important reason why he did that. First of all, this is an age of work. Secondly, this many people willy-nilly, they have fallen into this endless vicious circle of work. Even if you wish, you cannot get out. There is no way you can get out. So, whether you like it or not, you are in the world of this increasing amount of work. And therefore, you have to accept it. But having accepted, you may have spiritual aspirations. You will have to convert this work into a proper instrument of your spiritual progress. That is why karma has become karma yoga. And nobody has discussed what is the meaning of karma and whether we are really doing karma or not, what is the purpose of karma and how karma has got to be converted. All these things Swami Vivekananda has discussed. One point before we go further. If you ask any person, any devotee of Ramakrishna or Vivekananda, you ask, why are you doing karma yoga? But comes the reply that because Swami Vivekananda told us that we must do unselfish work for the sake of helping the world. This is the utter nonsense. Swami Vivekananda had never once made such a statement that you have to do the world is in need of your help and it is going to dogs because you are not helping it and you are the only person who can help it. Very clearly, one whole chapter he has devoted in his Karma Yoga, by helping the world, you help yourself. Make it very clear. Nobody is the beneficiary if you are doing something good. That is why he used to say, it is wrong to say, here poor man, take this paisa and be grateful to me. Kneel down and say, I am so blessed that I got a person in the form of one who takes from me. He has given me an opportunity to better myself. Be grateful to the receiver, because he is giving you an opportunity. You will not get these kind of statements in the Vedas and Upanishads and other places. The germinal ideas are there, but the explanation has to come. It had to wait for thousands of years for this age, for Swami Vivekananda to come and expose it. So, evolution is progress in karma, because we live in a world of karma. Life itself cannot go on without karma. Do you know that? What is the criteria of life? How do you know somebody is alive? No. It is, you see, if we are alive because of our cells. And how do we know our cells are alive? What is life? The ability of the cell to replicate itself is the criteria of life. When it stops replicating itself, it is dead. That means, what is this replication? Work. So, life cannot go on without work. You are sitting. And you say, what are you doing? No, I am not doing anything. Two people were sitting. And one man was passing by. So he knew this one of them who was sitting, both of them. So he asked, John, what are you doing? Oh, I am not, I am doing nothing. And he turned to the other, Harry, what are you doing? I am assisting John. What is the meaning of sitting? I am doing nothing. Your mind is working, your heart is working, your blood is being pumped, and your every nerve cell are furiously reproducing itself. Some cells are dying, some cells are replicating themselves. That is how life continues. What do you mean by doing nothing? And moreover, this work, even if you are sitting and doing nothing, it has a tremendous impact upon your life. We will come to that point. So life itself is impossible. So how do we know work is meant for a particular purpose? And as I said, what was the purpose of work? Means what is the purpose of life? To progress. And according to Vedanta, what is the meaning of progress? Progress towards Sat. Progress towards Chit. Progress towards Ananda. Which in other words means God realization is the only goal of life. Where are we progressing? If you ask this question, you know, if you ask, are you progressing? What do you mean by that question? Unless you have a goal, you cannot even ask that question. You simply don't go and catch hold of a person and say, are you progressing? You first have to know what task you have given to that man. You tell him that I want you to finish this work by today. Then every now and then you go and say, how far are you progressing? Is it not? There is a progress means a goal is already implied in that. So when we are talking about progress in life, what is the goal implied here? The goal is perfection, freedom. That is what one of the chapters says, 7th chapter of Karma Yoga of Swami Vivekananda. Karma Yoga means freedom. We are all progressing towards freedom. So work is supposed to lead us to increasing amount of freedom. But freedom from what? Freedom from ill health, both physical and mental. Freedom from ignorance, both intellectual and moral. Freedom from worldliness, which means towards spirituality, to know who we really are. This is the purpose of life. This is the purpose of progress. This is what is called evolution. Evolution means from a lower state to the higher state. When does it stop? It stops when we reach that particular goal. So karma is a Sanskrit word which means action. Now Swami Vivekananda was so scientific in defining it. So we simply think, if we are sitting here, what are you doing? No, I am not doing anything, I am sitting. Is not sitting a work? So what is the definition of karma? Whatever we do, either through thought or word or through the body, that is karma. And whatever we do, that completely affects us. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a teaching about Nishkama Karma Yoga. That is to say, work without any motive. That is to say, a person who is doing that type of work doesn't feel that I am doing any work. Who is capable of attaining to that state or making that statement that I do nothing? Only a person who has realized his real nature. Brahmagnan, he can say authentically, I do not do anything, because he doesn't need anything and he knows nobody else needs anything. Suppose a Brahmagnani comes to you and you know that you are an ignorant person and he is a Brahmagnani. But does he know that you are an ignorant person? In his eyes, what are you? You are Brahman. There is nobody else. Excepting God, there is nothing else in this world. You are Brahman. So if you ask him that I am an ignorant person, but you are a knower of Brahman, will you please help me? He will simply laugh and say, What a wonderful leela you are playing. Ramana Maharshi represents this kind of life, you know. People used to go to him and say, which way shall I go? He says, the same way you came, go back the same way. Dilip Roy, na, the singer, he went from Sri Aurobindo and said, at that time, the Indians were struggling for political freedom. So Dilip Roy, should I not serve our country by taking part in this freedom fight? Then Ramana Maharshi simply, you know, he used to sit and say, first you try to know how to help yourself. Then we will see whether you can help India or not. Most of the time that was his answer. But was he a passive type of person? Was he a stupid type of response? Even these freedom fighters came to Mahapurush Maharaj. I am not talking about political people. Our own devotees, who were highly devoted to Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda, and they came to Swami Shivananda and challenged him practically. In a way, you know, there are varieties of challenges are there. One type of challenge is to become angry and then question and fight. Another type of challenge is with a very sad face, oh, I am not happy with you. This is also another way of expressing displeasure. So these people were very sad. Swami Shivananda asked them, why are you so sad? Then they said that we are sad because the whole country is roused, as it were, by Mahatma Gandhi, and they were all trying to throw off this foreign yoke, whereas Ramakrishna Mission is not doing anything. You must have read about it. Mahapurush Maharaj became very grave and said, do you think you are wiser than us? Do you think you are wiser than Swami Vivekananda? It was Swami Vivekananda who exhorted and inspired the Indian youth to get up and fight and throw off this foreign yoke. It was the same Swami Vivekananda who founded this Ramakrishna order and brought all the brother disciples together. And he never said, you have to take part in this political struggle for freedom of India. On the contrary, he said, don't have anything to do with politics, but you just lead your life and your very life will inspire thousands of people. Did Swami Vivekananda ever protest against the British government? And yet who inspired the youth of India more than Swami Vivekananda? How was he able to do it? Because he has gone to the very root and said, it's not mere political freedom or economic freedom. It is the spiritual freedom that is the goal of human life. But once people understood that root idea, they can apply it to any kind of bondage. Are you poor? Throw it off poverty. Are you suffering from disease? Throw off disease. Are you suffering from political bondage? Throw off political. Any kind of bondage, you must be completely free of it. So the youth of India, thousands and thousands sacrificed their lives, went to jails. Somehow Bhagat Singh had given up his life. Who inspired them? Swami Vivekananda. How do I know? Because the British government had banned the complete works of Swami Vivekananda as revolutionary works. But you read Swami Vivekananda's, have you got anywhere one single sentence which says, you have to fight against the British government? You will not get one single sentence. But where from they got? Because you see, he gave the general idea. His ideas from his heart were inspiring the whole country. But this political freedom, everybody need not jump into the political fight. Some can pray to God and help the politics. Some can be good doctors and help the political fight. Some housewives just lead a good life and they can also help in the political freedom. Because once we have that knowledge, that spirituality, funnily, in a fun way, I compare it to credit card. You know credit card? You can convert it into anything. You want to buy a car? Credit plastic card. You want to buy jewelry? Credit card. You want to go to college? Credit card. You want to go to restaurant? Credit card. You want to buy an aeroplane? Credit card. You go to India? Credit card. You go to America? Credit card. You know, it covers everything. Spirituality is like that. If you are spiritual, then you can help anybody and everybody through that spirituality. What is the example? Is it correct statement? Yes. Sri Ramakrishna. How many schools did he start? How many hospitals did he start? And did he come to UK? Did he go to America to preach? What did he do? Simply he devoted his life to the realization of God and to talk about God. Is it not? Has he said anybody, you become a doctor, you become an engineer, you become an... He simply gave instructions to people, they must become spiritual. That is all he taught. But through that teaching, he inspired doctors, he inspired engineers, he inspired literary people. How many novels have been written? How many poems are people are writing poems on Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother? How many Swamis are going to America, Australia, Sydney, here, there, and then preaching about God and all that? How many people are starting schools, colleges, and trying to serve people? How many people have given up their life in the service of India and other countries? Because spirituality can help everybody in any way. That is why Swami Vivekananda has come. What is the purpose of work? Whether you do it for political freedom or intellectual knowledge, what is the ultimate goal? Freedom is the ultimate goal. So you judge work or karma yoga according to the amount of freedom that you really get. And the part of the scheme of freedom is you must become strong physically, mentally, intellectually, morally, and spiritually. Growth in any of these fields cannot be excluded unless we are foolish people. That is why Swami Vivekananda, when he came to America, what did he do? He preached pure Vedanta, Upanishadic teachings. When he went to India, what did he preach? Pure Vedanta. You say he didn't preach Vedanta. He preached only Vedanta. But he said that what is it most important thing? Suppose you are going for an interview and your car broke down. What is the most important thing for you to do? So people are suffering from poverty, from disease, from ignorance. That's why Swami Vivekananda said, produce more food. You have enough amount of few lands. Then let people get education. Let them get good jobs. Let them earn more money. Let them enjoy life. After that, they will know how to desire God. But what was he preaching? Pure Vedanta. But because we are children, we are being taught to get admitted into the elementary school, not into the, you know, PhD course. Whereas this in the West, they have already become strong. They know how to enjoy life. They are tired of life. It is called, he used to call it Bhoga Bhumi. What is our Bhumi? Roga Bhumi. It used to be. Now it is much better. Now, that is why he preached Vedanta here. He preached only Vedanta there. But the different teaching to suit, what is the ultimate purpose of both? He wanted Americans also, Westerners also, to realize God, progress towards self-knowledge. He wanted Indians also to progress towards self-knowledge, but differing needs. That is where this, particularly this karma yoga, is most revealing. We will discuss these ideas from next class onwards, taking the first chapter of Karma Yoga of Swami Vivekananda. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.